following program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Whole Foods Market celebrates Earth Month with Do Something Real Film Festival, a collection of six provocative, character-driven films focused on food, environmental issues, and everyday people with a greater vision. Come see one of the six features at City Cinemas Village East from Saturday, April 16th through Thursday, April 21st, every night at 6 p.m. Learn more about the films and special events at www.dosomethingreal.com.
Sunday, 3rd April 2011, this is Burning Down the House. I'm Curtis B. Wayne, architect. Thank you for joining us on this windy Sunday afternoon in Brooklyn, here in the garden of Roberta's Restaurant at 261 Morris Street. In architecture, from time to time, from age to age, there is an expression of hope for the future. In the early 20th century, in many drawings and illustrations of what the future would be like, we often saw the airship as a symbol of futurity. The future would be full of silent, long airships, like the Graf Zeppelin, the Zeppelin Hindenburg. A rigid, gas-filled craft that would take people across oceans efficiently, silently, beautifully. That was an image of the future as imagined 100 years ago. In our lifetime, starting in the late 1960s with the Whole Earth Catalog movement, which is appropriate to talk about since we've just heard that April is Earth Month. That's great. I guess that is all tying in with Earth Day. Do we know what day is Earth Day this year?
Not sure.
That's Jack, our engineer, executive producer, and doing the wonderful world of research and tagging for us this afternoon. Well, the symbol for the future, and in some ways the future has come and moved in right next door to us, is wind power. The wind, always blowing, always moving. Why not capture that wind? Why not help the wind that's trying to overturn our houses and our tall buildings into a productive and useful source of energy? Indeed, today, yesterday, tomorrow, there will be people proposing that in the tops of very tall towers we should have wind turbines. Most commonly, there are three designs of wind turbine that are being considered these days. Everyone who hasn't been living on Mars for the last 20 years knows about the gigantic three-rotor wind turbines that you see starting in Denmark and now proliferating everywhere, all over the world. Very tall, usually painted white, tall tower with three large, large airplane wing-type rotors, slowly spinning, sometimes rapidly, but usually rather slowly, pointing themselves towards the prevailing wind. There's the old-fashioned Western American ranch windmill, of course, with many blades on a horizontal axis, which is just an updated version of the old medieval, late medieval windmill, which was used and which we can still see in places like Holland, where the winds from the North Sea were harnessed for slowly grinding grain. In the American ranch windmill, that rotary power was turned with an offset crank, with a camshaft, turned into up and down motion to run a conventional pump, a water pump. Nothing special there. Then there are two other designs which merit some consideration. There's the Savonius rotor. If you imagine an oil drum standing upright, and you split that right down the middle so that you have two hemisphere containers, and you shift them half way apart, put a rotor in the middle, what you've got is this kind of a vertical paddle wheel. And that's very good for generating power with low torque. Doesn't want to spin all that fast. And it's self-starting. Either one scoop or the other will start to turn when the wind is blowing. But it has limitations in terms of scalability. These rotors, these Savonius, S-A-V-O-N-I-U-S rotors, tend to be small and mostly used for a little bit of power on an experimental basis. And then there's another, more aerodynamically sophisticated wind turbine called a Darius rotor. That's D-A-R-R-I-E-U-S. A design that was devised by a French engineer in the early 20th century. And those tend to look like an old-fashioned egg beater standing on end. That is, with a vertical axis and a vertical axle driving a generator, with the generator usually then at the base, down near to the ground, which makes it easier to maintain, as opposed to the three-bladed gigantic wind turbines where the turbine generator is way up at the top of the tower, which makes it difficult to maintain and difficult to get at if there are problems. Now, as I was walking through the windy streets of Manhattan recently, I started to think about all these proposals for having wind turbines on the top of the newer generation of tall towers and thinking about what a great thing that would be. Why aren't there more of them? What are the downside risks of having wind turbines? Which got me into a whole holistic train of thought about downside risks. Just this last week, we were talking about ways of revitalizing post-industrial towns. Towns like any of the industrial towns in the Mohawk Valley of upstate New York, or old industrial shoe towns like Haverhill, Massachusetts. If you've lived for a while out in America, in what we call the Rust Belt, parts of Indiana, Michigan, even Wisconsin and parts of Minnesota, you know that you'll be driving along and you'll come to a town with factory buildings that are largely empty because the local industry has become obsolete, or the means of production were shifted to some other part of the country or to overseas. So the idea that we were discussing with Jimmy Carbone, Heritage Radio Network's own host of Beer Sessions every week, where they talk about beer. So a bunch of us were getting together with Jimmy talking about the possibility of revitalizing post-industrial economies by letting a new brewery be the center of almost like an incubator for a new kind of urban ecology. It was an interesting term that I hadn't really heard before, where a brewery, which is otherwise an unwanted intrusion upon a community for a variety of reasons, would become the centerpiece of a new vitalization. Firstly, because local brewing has become quite the thing throughout, so especially here in the Northeast and also then in the Northwest, having your brewskis come from a local source. It employs people. It renews the craft of brewing. Why drink a Heineken if you can have Sierra Nevada? It was made right here. Didn't have to be shipped across the ocean. But breweries throw off waste heat, which if it's dumped into a river is not good for the fish. There is also the problem of the mash that's left over. Now, some local breweries feed that to pigs. That's all well and good, but there are other purposes to which the excess mash can be put. And then there's the yeast. So we're all talking about the possibilities of taking a brewery as the centerpiece of an urban ecology where there would be allied and related industrial agricultural businesses that would share back and forth the consequential waste or excess product, heat, water that needs cleaning, the mash, and so forth, into a thing called an urban ecology. So what does that have to do with having a farm of wind turbines? Well, as we know, lots of people don't like the way that they look, but we've discovered that wind power is not the clean and silent neighbor that we might once imagine. As a matter of fact, one of the problems with wind turbines is that those very large machines generate really low frequency sound, which got me thinking of an old cranky old song from the 1980s when wind power was still thought of as a futuristic thing. Let's hear a little bit of Wind Power by Thomas Dolby. Thomas Dolby, Wind Power. 1982. Would you want to live in a neighborhood where, off in the distance, a very low frequency sound was going on day and night, variably in terms of frequency and loudness, to the point where you couldn't anticipate it? I mean, it's one thing to live near to an interstate, and you know that whoosh of traffic is going to be very loud during rush hour, and on the weekends, not so bad. It's even not so bad to live near to a train. They come and they go, and in between, you have some peace. But the people in Falmouth, Massachusetts, have discovered that the wind turbines in their neighborhood are driving people to near suicidal degrees of unhappiness with the low frequency.
So I guess it's not one of those relaxing binaural beats.
No, it Jack, you read that from Wikipedia about the brown note. Can you find that?
Yeah, one sec.
Yeah, so it's when I was studying acoustics in grad school, I was told that the military investigated really low frequency sound as a possible weapon.
Which would bring us to the brown note.
The brown note.
Which is a, now this is important, a theoretical infrasonic frequency that would cause humans to lose control of their bowels due to resonance. And this theoretical frequency would be somewhere between 5 and 9 hertz.
Which is really low.
And humans can hear, you know, maybe right at 20 hertz.
Right. So it's a it's vibrating your guts. Well, the people in Falmouth are not very happy whatsoever. And nobody really explained to them that this was a possibility. And, you know, it gets all around to the inherent idea that I was thinking about after this little think tanky session talking with Jimmy Carbone and his eco friends and his brewing friends about the unintended consequences of industry and the old inherent, at least in the American system, of property rights. If you own a piece of land, you have the right to do whatever you want with it. Well, that's been modified over the 20th century with the advent of zoning laws, where the community has a say in what you can and cannot do in terms of use and in intensity of development and so forth of your property. And so then the next step would be if you were going to then start having wind turbines on your tower, the community has a right and would very much want to know exactly what you had in mind and what the unintended consequences might be of your development. In the case of the people in Falmouth, they are fighting mad, but there is very little that they can do about it. Most of them do not have the means to move somewhere else. Now, on a worldwide scale, most wind farms with the three-rotor design are way out at sea, where the winds are greatest and there are not hills or artificial structures to impede the movement of the wind. But in this particular case, the low-frequency sound is not a happy-making phenomenon. It's not the happy, light feeling of wind is our friend that we might have had in the 1960s. Let's just have a minute or two of something stupid from 1967. Yeah, everyone knows it's windy. Well, that was the kind of optimism that we had in the late 1960s with the whole Earth catalog, sense of optimism. We're all going to live in geodesic domes and wear tie-dyed T-shirts and grow our own crops.
And speaking of optimism, April 22nd is Earth Day.
All right. God, I hate to admit it, but I was there for the first Earth Day in Union Square. It was fun. I wore my tie-dye T-shirt, and I had a little soul patch and a mustache. It was a long time ago. Some of us still have optimism about what the possibilities for the future would be. So if we look at tall buildings and we talk about the wind blowing over them, we have all these different variants on, is it a horizontal rotor, like the big wind turbines that you see off of Aarhus in Denmark, I think it's where it is, and the local people are very proud of it, or Falmouth, where the locals are not happy at all. Out west, there are enormous wind farms, but they're far from habitations, and so the low-frequency sound that's generated by those turbines is not a problem. But what we don't want in terms of taking this notion, this notion of the future and making it beautiful and bright and clean and silent, is to create misery where none existed before. Maybe, as our friends and brothers and sisters and cousins are learning in Japan, we have to ratchet back our use of electricity. So we knew from their own experience, as safe as you can make an atomic reactor, things happen, and it's a very nasty business. So we don't want to start proliferating nasty modern technology that has unintended consequences of people having physiological distress from something as unstoppable as low-frequency sound. So what about the Darius rotor? Well, there are versions of these where they take the airplane blades, almost like helicopter blades, but they're mounted vertically and they spin around a rotor. And you can take that, you can have two of them or three. You can also then twist them like a snow cone into a helical design that's even more efficient. Problem is that the Darius rotors don't start themselves in a light wind. So oft times there'll be a small Savonius rotor to get the thing going, and then it'll spin. And that sound is much more high frequency, and it's more likely that that high frequency sound will be blocked by the structures of our habitations, because we know that low frequency sound travels through structure quite readily, and it's really almost impossible to get away from low frequency sound. It gets into the structure and drives you mad. I mean, you can be in a perfectly quiet modern building in Manhattan, or I suppose in some places of the outer boroughs, and you'll still hear the subway rumbling, that very low frequency sound borne through the earth, through the tunnel, up into the structure of the building. Now the Savonius rotor, because it does travel around its axis at higher speeds, it's great. You can get a lot of RPMs. You can generate a lot of power from the generator that's connected to that. You can gear it up. You can get Darius rotors that'll generate maybe 20, 30, 50 kilowatts. That's pretty good power. The very large three-blade industrial rotors, the gigantic things, might generate as much as a megawatt or more. And then there's another design recently proposed by the architects of the firm of Grimshaw in United Kingdom. They took a variation on the Darius rotor. So they propose a very large, they call it the aerogenerator, a very large V-shaped armature with airplane wings at either side, like a pair of planes circling each other, banked at 45 degrees, an assembly the width of, 270 meters, the width of three football fields. I mean, a gigantic thing, where at the base there'd be a huge generating plant that would produce perhaps 10 to 50 megawatts of power. Well, that's very good, but that's intended to be out at sea on pylons or a floating structure way, way, way out, so that if any noise was generated, it wouldn't matter, but also would have unimpeded wind flow. So the Grimshaw aerogenerator is a very interesting idea, but that is definitely a high capital intensive sort of development. They are going to build one. It's estimated that it will start sometime in the next 3 years or so. What with the worldwide capital market collapse, we'll see what happens. It's a proposal that goes back a while. But back to the Darius rotor. Yes, you could put a Darius rotor on your building, and it'd be spinning along merrily at maybe 120 RPM. That's, for those of you who still spin vinyl, that's twice as fast as your, four times faster than your 3 1/3 LP. Pretty fast, then. So fast, in fact, that birds don't see the Darius rotor blades. So imagine if we had these on the tall towers. Walking down the street, you might from time to time be pelted by bits of chopped fowl. That really would be unpleasant. Much more unpleasant, of course, for the pigeons and hawks and peregrine falcons who live in the tall towers of New York. But a definitely unintended consequence of trying to trap that and use that wind power, having birds sliced up and thrown to the wind. So it seems that in some ways every good intention in this modern age may have an unintended, sad result. Let's have a little bit of Hendrix and then wrap it up.
After all the jets are in the boxes, and the clowns have all gone to bed, you can hear happiness staggering on down the street. Footprints dressed in red, and the wind whispers merrily. A broom is drearily sweeping up the broken pieces of yesterday's life. Somewhere a queen is weeping. Somewhere a king has no wife. And the wind, it cries very.
Following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to The Naturalist every Monday at 12 p.m. Ernie Wides, a.k.a. The Naturalist, is a walking encyclopedia of history, biology, geography, and a whole host of other words ending in Y. The Naturalist is his platform to make you just a little bit smarter every week, covering an enormous breadth of topics from animal life to prehistoric New York. Let Bernie's dulcet voice and razor-sharp intellect guide you through 30 minutes of pure, unadulterated knowledge. Co-hosted by Carol Butler. Again, that's every Monday at 12 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
Burning down the house. Talking about wind power, I'm Curtis B. Wayne, architect and your host. So there's no really clear winner when it comes to wind power. I wish that I could think of something that would somehow combine all of this, but it's for smarter minds than mine, I'm afraid. I mean, we've all been thinking about these things for decades, and we're not quite there yet. It's like the dream of room temperature cold fusion power. It may never happen that we can make a wind turbine that either doesn't chop up birds or create these low frequency sounds that make people sick. I mean, the people in Falmouth would say that the brown note is not theoretical, and they are experiencing some version of that every day. And there are so many people there who are so vociferous that it is not something that we can easily neglect. I'd have to say that, somebody else thinks of a slightly different way to do it, the answer is just really blowing in the wind. So roll the next one and we'll go out on that. This has been Burning Down the House here on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Curtis B. Wayne. Thanks for listening. Keep the faith. The answer to wind power is still just blowing in the wind. Thanks. Before she sleeps in the sand,
isn't how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned. The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many years can a mountain exist before it is washed to the sea? Yes, and how many years can some people exist before they're allowed to be free? Yes, and how many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? Yes, and how many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry? Yes, and how many deaths will it take till he knows that too many people have died? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
The following message has been brought to you by Fairway Market. What's the buzz about honey? Well, those busy little bees are up to something, and it is delicious. The Fairway label honey is superb. Fairway only hires worker bees that are the best at what they do. This makes for a great tasting, high quality honey at an amazing value with the Fairway stamp of approval. And on top of being delicious, honey is a great substitute for other sweeteners and can even benefit your health. This includes better energy, respiratory improvements, and balanced blood sugar levels. It's a no-brainer. Get your Fairway honey today. The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. The Snacky Tunes compilation has arrived and is available for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com. This compilation features live performances from some of the hottest acts around today, including Midnight Magic, Surfer Blood, Oberhofer, and more. Again, you can download this compilation for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com, and make sure to listen to Snacky Tunes every Monday at 2 p.m. on Heritage Radio Network.